facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Tremendous Thursday to you. So glad you're with me on the program. Got a great show lined up for you today. I can't wait to get started with this. Father Harrison Ayer is going to be my guest in just a few moments. But if you want to call in, if you want to talk to our guest, talk to me, give me a shout. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free studio line to call. 1-888-914-9149. You can also try my Twitter handle, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, and Clark with an E, or the show account, at Cale Clark Show. And that show account, actually, you might have noticed, was briefly suspended by Twitter earlier in the day. A bit of a technical glitch there. We started it up only in July of this year, so they thought we were only a couple months old and really too young to have a Twitter account by all standards. We quickly cleared that up, and we're back online there. So if you want to check out the show account, you can do that, at Cale Clark Show. And you can always email the show, cale@relevantradio.com. And we're going to get right to it with our guest. My guest today is one half of the dynamic duo, along with Father Anthony Schirappa, of the outstanding and fabulously funny Clerically Speaking podcast. And if you want to find the Twitter account for that podcast, it's at ClericalPod. And of course, the Clerically Speaking podcast is the home of the famous Summa Tweetologica, which we'll get into in a little bit. And that podcast has been described as a, quote, fantastic blend of humor and thought-provoking discussion. He's also the pastor of St. Peter's Catholic Church in Nanaimo, B.C., and he's a Ph.D. candidate at the Maryvale Institute, where he's doing his doctoral research on the theological anthropology of one Joseph Ratzinger, probably better known to you by his alter ego, Pope Benedict XVI. Father Harrison Ayer is my guest. Father Harrison, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great, Cale. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And I have to ask you, you're right now ministering in Nanaimo, B.C., and I've always wondered, is that the home of the Nanaimo bar? Was it invented there?
It was invented here. Now, it's funny because, like, they're made all over. I'm actually not a huge fan of the Nanaimo bar. I've never really liked it. I know. I'm so weird. I know. But yes, this is the home. There are competitions. And now apparently some restaurants are rated by which ones have the best Nanaimo bars in town.
Now, just to explain for any listeners in the United States and around the world, because, of course, we have here one of my fellow Canucks, one of my fellow Canadians, Father Harrison, on the show today. The Nanaimo bar is kind of a dessert. It's made with chocolate. It's got this kind of creamy filling. It's one of my favorite desserts, if not my favorite dessert of all time. You can't beat a cold Nanaimo bar. And I didn't bring you on to talk about sweets. We won't get into some hopefully sweeter subjects in just a few moments. But if you don't know what that is, it's a Canadian dessert, and it's amazing. I love them. But please don't mail any to the Relevant Radio headquarters, because they will simply not keep.
Well, apparently they're in New York, but they call them New York bars. That's what I've heard. I've heard this, and I'm like, I'm not surprised by this.
That's so
I'm not
shameless.
Surprised by this at all. Exactly. I'm like, no. It is in Nanaimo. However, I do know a lot of Americans know about the Nanaimo bar, because when I moved here, all my American friends on Twitter were like, "Is that the home of the Nanaimo bar?" So it's well known. It's well known.
Well, you're getting pretty well known as well on Twitter. You recently passed the magical 20,000 follower mark, and yep. I don't know what you get for that. Any kind of prize or
just a whole lot more trolls.
Get an extra 20,000 trolls. Yeah, exactly. So your Twitter account, by the way, is at Father Harrison. He's a great follow on Twitter. You're definitely going to want to check that out. At FR Harrison is his Twitter handle. And, you know, I want to start off by asking, speaking of social media, recently in pre-COVID times, you were on a panel at Notre Dame University along with some other Catholics who are really, really active on social media, such as Sister Teresa Alethea, who's constantly reminding us that we're dying soon. You can explain that a little bit. Shannon Last, and of course your friend Father Anthony, who co-hosts the Clerically Speaking podcast with you. It was all about friendship in the digital age. Now, being active on social media as you are, especially on Twitter, what have you found helpful in developing meaningful friendships with others online?
You know, so in my, it actually, for me, it started as a place where I got to know other priests. My diocese is really lacking in vocations. we didn't, there was a period we didn't have ordinations for like 15 or 20 years.
Wow.
So yeah, we need some priests here. And so, I mean, there are priests obviously, you know, here, but I'm an extrovert and I like hanging out and talking to people. And so I actually started to use it as I ended up becoming a place where I got to know other priest friends. Mm-hmm. Who we're all good friends with now. We were kind of famously called the priest DM for a while in Catholic Twitter, but we're still friends. We've met up a few times and hang out, and we talk to each other and stuff like that all the time. And so that's how it kind of started for me. And so it really became a place for a priest where I'm in a diocese where perhaps there aren't as many, you know, there's a couple priests around my age and stuff like that. But it became a place to get to know other priests out there who I've become good friends with. And so Twitter became a place to begin friendships at the very least. Like, wow. you interact with each other online, but the interaction can only do so much. And then you're like, hey, I want to actually hang out with this person in real life. So let's get together. Let's travel somewhere together and hang out. So yeah, Twitter became that place for me first. And it's not just been with priests. It's been obviously people like Sister Teresa. And then Shannon, who was on that panel, has become very good friends with her and her families and other peoples as well. It's been amazing the friendships that have been fostered because of Twitter.
Father Harrison Eyre is my guest. And Father Harrison, speaking about, you know, the lack of vocations where you are out in the Diocese of Victoria, and hopefully they'll be changing in the future. I want to talk a little bit about your vocation before we move any further. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up, and what was your spiritual journey like when you were growing up? Did you even realize you're on a spiritual journey?
I did not. So I was baptized as a baby, and that was about the extent of my sacramental life as a Catholic up until about 19 or so. So my mom was one of the last people in BC to have polio.
So no kidding.
So she was very sick when we were growing up. And so she never had the energy. My mom's the Catholic. My dad's a lapsed Anglican.
Okay.
And so she just never had the energy to take us to church. She was just too sick all the time. She's had over 30 surgeries in her life.
My goodness.
So yeah, it's been tough on her. So she, so what happened was so we just didn't go to church at all, really. And it wasn't anything ill-willed or anything. It just fell off. Right. But I grew up in Vancouver, and then on the mainland, I graduated from high school when I was 18. I decided to go to Victoria to go to university. So that's on Vancouver Island. So it's separate from Vancouver.
Yep.
And for those, I'll find a lot of Americans don't know this. It's like Vancouver Island is geographically separate from the mainland.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing.
So I wanted to go to somewhere. Well, I mean, there's Vancouver all over in the Pacific Northwest, right?
So, that's true. Vancouver, Washington,
And Oregon. And it's just like...
There are other names you could give your cities, you know. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I went to UVic to go study computer science. That was my plan. And in my first year, this is an important part of the story, I actually took a philosophy class because in my high school, my computer science prof said, make sure to take a philosophy class. It is very important if you want to be a computer scientist.
But wow. Interesting that he would make that connection.
Yeah, well, he said logic and reasoning is what you need to do to do it's because computer programming is essentially logic, right? I went and I hated it. I hated computers. I was bored. I didn't like it, but I did enjoy my philosophy class. And in all of this, I did not have a place to live in Victoria when I was looking to move there. I waited too late to find a place to live. I waited till August in a university town. That is the worst time to be looking.
Oh, absolutely.
But my grandma called me up. And she said, hey, I just read in my church bulletin that a priest is living near the university, and he's willing to host Catholic men for $550 room and board a month. And he's right next to university. Now, as someone who really never went to church, this was not my idea of what university experience would be like.
Yeah, room with a priest,
Yeah, exactly. I also really didn't have a choice. I needed somewhere to live, and it was a great price. And it made my mom happy because I was right next to the campus. So I kind of lived with him kind of half-heartedly. I was like, I went to church once that year, and I thought I'm a good Catholic because I went to church once. But I had no idea. And then that summer he asked me, hey, what's your sense of, when would you receive confirmation in First Communion? I said, what is that? I don't even know what that is. And so he suggested I kind of learn about my faith and start that. So I did. And I learned about the faith. It all made sense to me. The key was I did not have a conversion of heart. And so this is my second year. I'm doing health information sciences at university. I'm learning about the faith. I get confirmed and my first communion at Easter 2003. But I'll be honest about this. I did not do my first confession before that. I was too afraid. And wow. I stopped going to church. And I stopped going to church the Sunday after. After Easter.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I this is part of, also, I was going kind of through a kind of young adult crisis. I wasn't sure what to do with my life. I wasn't finding anything I was enjoying at university. I kind of moved home for the summer. Was doing work I didn't really enjoy. So I decided, you know what? I mean, I was 20-year-old reasoning. I thought, well, the best thing to do is to go back to school, take more student loans so you can support yourself, and go study philosophy.
Sounds like a great career path.
It was a great career path. And so, but what happened was so it was in that third year. I still remember the date and time. It was January 8th, 2004. I was sitting at my computer one night, and I said to myself, out of nowhere, I said to a friend on MSN Messenger, and I said, I have to go. And I said to myself, I have to pray. I was like, oh, okay. So how do you pray? It wasn't something I really knew what to do. So I the only inspiration that came to me was just to slowly say Jesus' name over and over again. So that's what I did. And it's hard to put into words, but it was an incredible encounter with God's love in that moment. I felt immersed in his love. And then the next inspiration was to pick up the Bible and read. And I just randomly opened it to 1 Samuel 3, which is the call of Samuel.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like,
that's a St. Augustine moment.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, this is not a coincidence. So I emailed Father John, the priest I was living with for a couple of, before this all, because I wasn't living with him at this point. Can I come back to take RCA? I'll take it seriously now. I said, I can't come every week. He said, you can only come if you come every week. And I did. And a few weeks later, we had the talk on confession, and he heard me in my small group about my hesitancies about the sacrament. And he came up to me that night. He says, you know, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet. And I did. I went to confession the next Saturday, my first confession. I still remember, like, it was a very powerful moment. He gave me one Our Father for my penance. So I'm thinking, like, did you not just hear everything I said?
You know? Let me off real easy.
Yeah, exactly. But it was an amazing experience of God's mercy, and the confessional has always been confession has always been a sacrament. I have deeply loved from that. And so it was from there that the idea, after that conversion, pretty quickly after that, the idea of priesthood started to arise. And that was a bit more of a normal path. But and you know, ups and downs. There were times of, yes, let's do this. There was a time of, hey, let's go get married. That'd be great. But the definitive moment, there was a definitive moment for me, actually. I was very blessed to do a course in Poland in 2007 with George Weigel. It's called the Tertio Millennio Seminar on Freedom and Society, on the Free Society. And so we learn about John Paul II's philosophies and theologies of the human person, international relations theory, Catholic social teaching, all in Krakow for 3 weeks. And it's amazing. But it was there I got to know a lot of seminarians, and they all heard my waffling, and they said, you have to go to seminary. You have to give it a shot. And that's what I did. Yeah, and it was in the time of... Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I guess at some level, you don't know until you go. When you're thinking about that vocation, you just got to, you know, try it, and you might like it. It's like the Life cereal commercial of days gone by, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I was so grateful for them, because they said, if you don't go, you'll beat yourself up about it for the rest of your life. And it was in there that, through the ups and downs, there were a couple times I'm like, get me out of here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in seminary anymore. But it was in all that the discernment was purified and came to fruition. And it was very funny. The time I came to a confirmation about, hey, yeah, this is what I want to do, God kind of threw a little bit of a roadblock. Because then, before being ordained a deacon, my bishop at the time asked me, before being ordained a deacon, he wanted me to do a mission year. And so I spent a year in the States working with Mother Teresa's Sisters, the Missionaries of Charity. Wow. So 6 months in Gallup, New Mexico, and then 3.5 months out of in San Francisco in their hospice for the dying. So I got to spend a year with those sisters, which was a really amazing year and was really actually one of the highlights of my seminary formation, and was eventually ordained a deacon. And then that bishop got moved, so I actually had to wait a year and a half before being ordained a priest.
a year and a half, which is a long time to be a transitional deacon.
It is a very long time, but it is what it is. And then, so I've been ordained now for 5.5 years.
Okay, my guest is Father Harrison Eyre, who is the co-host of the Clerically Speaking podcast. You can follow him on Twitter, @FRHarrison. And by the way, your co-host, that's a lot. Thanks for sharing your vocation story and how you came back to the Lord. And it's interesting because that is a lot different from what your co-host, Father Anthony, says his vocation story is all about. Because he says he was bitten by a radioactive priest.
I could see him being like suplexed into the priesthood, you know. he's a big wrestler. He's a big wrestling fan.
I did not know that. Well,
yes.
You know, it's one of the darkest days of my life when I found out that wrestling wasn't real. Oh, sorry if I just blew it for Father Anthony, but all those dramas weren't really taking place in real life. But you're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Father Harrison Ayer, and we're talking about how to evangelize through social media. Just before we get into this a little bit more, we have to take a break in just a second. I want to ask you, as a priest, and you're obviously trying to evangelize as a priest, and all Catholics should be mm-hmm. trying to evangelize all the time in everything we do. Mm-hmm. What are the benefits of using social media to try to evangelize?
I think if, you know, this is where a lot of people are, just pure and simple. And it's amazing how something so insignificant that you might even tweet out or put on Facebook, how because of a particular moment in someone's life, that's exactly what they needed to hear to go and pray for the first time in a long time, mm-hmm. or to reinvestigate going back to church even, or you're speaking to questions that are on their heart that make them think, hey, maybe this Catholic thing is actually not so bad. And so I just find it's just generally a good place. If as long as we are trying to be like virtuous and to be, mm-hmm. to be authentic online, the benefit is outstanding. It's really, you know, Pope Benedict calls the internet, like social media, the digital continent, right? And
yeah,
so
that's right.
this is a quote unquote space where people are, and it's where people spend a lot of their time. In fact, it's where they spend most of their time, I think. I mean, if we all took a look at our screen time every week on our phone, I think we would find how often we use social media, right?
It's a little scary.
It's a little scary. But it is, and I've seen a lot of good fruit out of it. It's not always positive experience, but evangelization's messy, and it's going to be messy sometimes. But the advantages, I think, are, I don't actually, to be honest, in some ways, I don't think we've tapped in fully to the advantages yet.
I want to follow up on that with you after this break. We're with Father sure. Harrison Ayer on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you want to call in and speak to our guest, if you have a question for him about being a Catholic in the digital age, 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll be right back with Father Harrison after this short word.
The faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the show. My guest today is Father Harrison Ayer. We'll be back with Father Harrison in just a moment, but before I get back to my discussion with him, I want to remind you that you can join Relevant Radio tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central as we broadcast the Apparition Anniversary Mass from the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. And by the way, that is the only approved Marian apparition site in the entire United States. And this annual Mass commemorates the time when Our Lady appeared in October of 1859, identifying herself as the Queen of Heaven who prays for the conversion of sinners. Bishop David Ricken, who is the Bishop of Green Bay, will be the celebrant, and of course our own Drew Mariani is going to provide commentary of this very special Mass. Now, if you normally listen to or watch the daily Mass that happens at noon Central on Relevant Radio, please make note that this special broadcast of the Apparition Anniversary Mass tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central, okay, so it's a little bit earlier, at 11 a.m. Central, that is going to replace the regular noon Central Mass tomorrow. So once again, you can listen to this on your local Relevant Radio station, or you can even watch it online at relevantradio.com or through the Relevant Radio apps. That's tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central, the Anniversary Mass from the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. And it's kind of interesting because she says that she is the Queen of Heaven who prays for the conversion of sinners. And before the break, Father Harrison Ayer and I, who's the co-host of the Clerically Speaking podcast, we're talking about Father Harrison's journey to God and then to the priesthood. And we're going to go to the phones right now because we've got a call for a father, and it's from Norma, who's listening in Miami. Norma, welcome to the show. You're on with Father Harrison.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking that call. I have a kind of like a quick question, but I have my nephew. He's my godson also, and he's 31 years old. The last time that he went to church, I think it was when he was 18. We had a conversation a couple of days ago regarding church, regarding faith, and he told me basically that he believes in God. However, he doesn't believe that he needs to go to church. He doesn't feel like he needs to be there, that he would be a hypocrite if he was to go, and that he doesn't want to just go through the motions of going to church just so that people say, oh, what a good kid he is, you know, he goes to church. And I was telling him about the importance of having God in your heart, and he told me, he told me that he was blessed because he was taught from wrong, that he was raised in a Catholic household. He went to Catholic high school. But yet he doesn't feel like he needs to be there. And as much as within my little knowledge, I was trying to see how I could tell him how it.
Okay, let me hop in there, Norma. What do you have to say about that, Father? Any comments about how she can help her nephew?
Yeah, there's a few going through my head here. I think the first thing is just to, you know, maybe not always having to explain it, but sharing stories about why the Mass and going to Mass is such an important thing in your life of faith. That is often something, and that's something that's often going to work very well. But it's also having patience, like that persisting patience of quietly proposing, living a life that exudes holiness. Because one of my favorite theologians, he says, the best apologetic is the saint. The best defense of the faith is the saint. And so if we can exude a life of holiness to them, that will raise questions in their heart. These questions might take years sometimes for some people, but but continue to propose. I mean, and pray. I think this is the most important thing. We want to do action, obviously, but we also need to pray and to fast and to do penance for those we want to see grow in their relationship with God. Because really, for us as Catholics, our faith in Christ, our experience of Christ happens through the church. And this is something that needs to be catechized in a bit more sometimes, that the church is the means and the place whereby we encounter the person of Jesus. And so I would just, so a great way, I think one of the best ways is that first suggestion is just share your own experience sometimes and say, this is why it's important to me. And I'm not asking for you to do anything right now, but I just want you to hear it and to ponder it. And that, obviously you have a good relationship with him to have those questions. And I think that's really important. So just continue. It's going to take time, patience, but pray and fast as well.
Those are really important things that we often neglect doing in our outreach. And yeah, I think that's so important. You know, the bridge of relationship, you know, has to remain intact, and and whether it's with a family member or with a friend, and that sharing your story approach, it's a great approach, because really nobody can say, oh, that's not true, you know, God's not really doing that in your life. There's not much you can say back to that, you know, other than kind of listen. And so those testimonies are really, really important. And one of the ways that we can share our faith, obviously, in this digital age, is through social media. And before the break, we were talking about, by the way, my guest is Father Harrison Ayer, and you can call in with your question for him, 1-888-914-9149 on the Cale Clark Show. We were talking about how Pope Benedict, who obviously you're doing a lot of doctoral research on his thought, and I want to hear about that later. He talked about, you know, social media as being a vast digital continent. It's a way that we can reach people. It's a mission field. But there are some who say you should really get off social media, whether it's too much of a distraction. I think about people like Cal Newport, who's a very famous author. He's written a lot of thought-provoking books like Deep Work and Digital Minimalism. I know you've started reading that book. But he had a very famous TED Talk a while back called Quit Social Media. Mm-hmm. And I've watched that talk, and I know you have too, and you have some issues with that approach.
Yeah, it's very, I watched it, actually I just watched it this afternoon in preparation for our chat here, and I was disturbed by it, because everything he was talking about was through the lens of work and productivity. Now, he did mention how there are other ways for him to refresh and to, you know, when he's done working at the end of the day, and that's good and that's fine. But I, for me, the way he seemed to see social media was not as the opportunity of an encounter of persons, but as at service to my career path and to my productivity. And if that is the way you see social media, yeah, you maybe should get off it. But I think I think the Catholic approach is that it's an attempt to have an encounter of persons in which a relationship and a proposition can be had, whereby we can propose the faith through a relationship that's established. And I think that's the Catholic approach, and that's a bit more human. And I'm not saying work isn't human, obviously, but just it was very much like in this kind of work is your identity kind of mindset. And I found that difficult. I'm like, yeah, if that's your vision of social media, yeah, I want off.
That's an interesting take. And, you know, I encourage people to watch that TED Talk. It's pretty short by Cal Newport. Mm-hmm. You can find that on YouTube, Quit Social Media. And that is true. Like, he does talk about a lot of the utilitarian aspects of social media, if you will. And is it worth it? He says things like, I already have friends, you know, like I have plenty of friends. I haven't been on social media. I haven't created a Facebook account and I still have people to hang out with on the weekends. That's very, very true. Mm-hmm. But social media is a place where we can meet others, as you did when you first joined Twitter. You met all these priests and developed these mm-hmm. relationships. We can meet others. We can use it as a medium to communicate the faith. But is there a bit of a danger sometimes? Because one thing he said in the talk was that nobody is their real self on social media. Like when you look at their Facebook accounts, people put up these very curated versions of their lives, or everything's perfect, and they don't really admit who they really are. So is it even possible to develop a real relationship over social media? How do you approach it?
So I've actually had similar critiques, especially around stuff like Instagram, where we almost like curate our photo to show the pristine version of our household when, you know, you don't see the other 95 hours of the week where it's like chaos and everything. Right. But the way it is, I think it is meant to be approached is that, you can build relationships. I would agree that I think there is a limitations to it, but that it's meant to be like a stepping stone whereby you actually enter into real life with people. Like, I cannot tell you, I've literally met hundreds of people I've gotten to know through Twitter, which is crazy and weird and awesome. I mean, listen, I'm on your show right now because of Twitter.
That's right? A great point. That's a great point. That's how we met each other.
Yeah, and we had a great conversation this morning. It was delightful. But Twitter was a stepping stone whereby, and I would say it's like an initial place of encounter. And I think you have to see it as a place of encounter of persons. There are dangers because we haven't, I think there are attitudes we have towards digital communications that perhaps are modern and not Catholic, whereby we see our social media sense as like an extension of our, as an avatar. Like it's extensive. It's something I create, rather than a place where my personhood is expressed. And I think if it becomes more the latter, where it becomes, this is who I am. And this is like, listen, that's how I am on Twitter. Because like, you're going to see me posting lots of Ratzinger quotes all the time, because that's what I'm reading right now. And I'm an extrovert, so I need to process externally. But like, and I mean, yeah, there are times where, I mean, like, I think there is different levels of exposure according to your level of friendship, where I have deeper encounters with people where I can text them or DM them about more private things, where I'm struggling with something, you know, listen, like I just posted actually today, I was doing a care home visit. I said, it just breaks my heart at how lonely the people in care homes are. That's not something beautiful, but it's an important truth to share. And I think we need, you know, I think there is the danger absolutely of putting forth a fake self. But I think the Catholic approach is to say, this is authentically who I am, not having to share absolutely everything. Yeah. But because people don't have a right to that, but you just be your authentic self. And I have seen that, and I'm grateful that. Like, one of my favorite things online is watching, especially when all the different Pauline sisters are interacting with each other.
Yeah.
And they're kind of having fun and teasing each other. It's beautiful, and they're being themselves, because I've met these sisters, right? I know this is how they are in real life. And so there's no disconnect there. It can be a danger, but I think that's also a possibility to be your authentic self.
My guest is Father Harrison Ayer on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you have a question for Father or comment, you can call 1-888-914-9149. I really like what you said about how there is a temptation to create an avatar of yourself on social media. That's really interesting. And and as you say, though, you don't seem to have a problem with that. Like, you're able to be your true self on Twitter for the most part. Mm-hmm. And obviously, what we want to do, you know, as Catholics, one of our goals is to become more virtuous and become a better version of ourselves, to become saints. That's really what we're called to through our baptism, of course. Is there a way to do that? Is there a way to grow in virtue online? And if so, how can that happen?
If you're being yourself, you're going to do good things and you're going to do bad things. Because we all have areas in our life where we have not properly grown in virtue in yet. But how do you grow in virtue? By trying things out and building new habits. But you can't build a new habit by avoiding. You only build a new habit by doing, right? This is basic virtue ethics in the Catholic tradition, right? You you want to build a habit, you got to do it. You want to pray more, you actually got to pray. You can't just think, I want to pray. You actually have to pray. And so really, and like, so like for me, I actually, you know, I go through my ups and downs on different virtues. Like right now, one of the things I'm actually asking myself honestly is like, I think I've been on too much. So what do I need to do to be on less and to curate my time better on how I use social media? But that's fine. But you don't know that until you're kind of out there doing stuff. But then, like, you have times where, like, there's been times where I have said something stupid or maybe a little offensive and I didn't mean it to be, and I didn't think about everything, and maybe I hurt someone. I recognize it, I acknowledge it, and I apologize. And people who are good friends will say, hey, Father Harrison, that was maybe a step too far. And I've learned through that. So now, really, honestly, I have the habit, most of the time before I tweet something is, should I be hitting send? Yeah. And I often type something out and I don't send it because I'm asking myself this question. And that's how you grow in virtue. It's just through the experience. It's in the mud of it all. It's how life is. And it's how, and so that's the thing. I think we've created a sense like social media is not real life, but it is. It's reality. It's part of our reality. And so how we act on there and how we grow in virtue or vice on there is exactly the same of how we're going to grow in virtue or vice in real life.
That's a good point. It's also, you know, it's helpful to remember that there are real people, you know, behind their Twitter avatars, behind the keyboard. And it's true. People might say things that they might not normally say to one's face. But that doesn't mean that we should respond in kind. And obviously, you know, especially on Twitter, you know, one of the things you have to deal with all the time are Twitter trolls. Like, how do you deal with that?
Honestly, I ignore sometimes. Well, because like you get so much, you can't respond to everything anyways. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I mean, I do have kind of principles. Like if it's an anonymous account where I don't know who you are, I probably am not going to respond.
Yeah,
because you're not taking the risk that I'm taking when I'm expressing myself online. I know that if someone doesn't like what I'm doing, they could just write my bishop. They know which diocese I'm in. It's very easy to do, right? Or, you know, if they like what I'm doing, they can write them, whatever. But I'm out there. So it's just a personal principle of how I curate my social media. But if you're like an Anon, like we call them Anons, right? You're just like some obscure saint avatar with like Deus Fault or whatever in your username.
Yeah, or the Twitter egg, if you remember those ones.
Yeah,
I don't think they have those anymore. But
yeah, so that I just kind of ignore it. You know, I just think this isn't worth my time right now. If someone's being uncharitable and I can't say something charitable back, I won't respond. But I'll try and pray for them. I'll say Hail Mary for them or something like that. And then I will, but people who I know or people who have placed their faith with it, often I will do my best to try, even if they're being a little harsh towards me for whatever reason, I will do my best to do, and there are steps, right? There are times where you do have to mute people, where you do have to block people. Yeah. And that does happen. And that's okay to do. But, you know, I try to give people kind of steps to go through. So I think everyone does it differently, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to do what's best for you to kind of grow in virtue. Because I think this should be enjoyable.
Yeah,
it's social. It's social, right?
Yeah,
it's social. Let's make it social.
I think that's important, too, because with Father Harrison Ayer on the Cale Clark Show, if it's causing you a lot of stress, if it is taking away from your work time, your family time, prayer time, relationships with others in your life. These are real people too, of course, behind the keyboard, as we were just talking about. But if it's causing a lot of negative impact in your life, you really have to then take a step back and maybe recalibrate a little bit, reset. But I do like what you said about, you know, the imbalance of relationships that can happen sometimes online, like these anonymous people that are trying to interact with you. You're putting your name out there, you're putting your photo out there, and you're being real. And a lot of times people aren't being real back. And sometimes when they try to engage you, they're not trying to learn anything or get answers to their questions. They're just trying to argue. Mm-hmm. And that can be a problem too, obviously, in this environment that we're in, where we have such deep divisions, not only in the culture at large, mm-hmm. but even within the church. And we see this on Twitter all the time. Like there are civil wars on Twitter, you know, among Catholics that are just like nuclear, really, in their imports. So
it's here's one thing I'm learning though through it all: these civil wars don't matter one iota to the agnostic person in the street.
Huh, that's a good point.
And if we're going to be evangelical, we got to stop. I mean, listen, these internal debates sometimes are worth fighting and stuff like that. That's always going to be part of the life of the church. The church is a society. But they should be oriented properly around our main mission, which is going out and evangelizing.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. And social media is one great way to do that. Also, podcasts. Yeah. You're going to want to follow Father Harrison on Twitter and get some of his insights and see how he's evangelizing. At Fr. Harrison is his Twitter handle. And of course, the Clerically Speaking podcast that he co-hosts with Father Anthony Schirappa is also really, really engaging as well. We're going to take a really quick break right now on the show. We'll be back with more Father Harrison after this break. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Welcome back to the Cale Clark Show. Producer Lucas Holt, DJing, if you will, in the background. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. You know, we talk about our lives on social media, and sometimes we want to separate those from the true reality of who we are as persons. And our guest today on the show is Father Harrison Ayer of the Clerically Speaking podcast. And one of the things we were talking about before the break, Father, was, you know, how we could try to build virtue through social media. And one of your podcasts, it's actually one of the most popular episodes ever on your show, was about something that a lot of people don't even know about. It's something called acedia. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics to talk about. It comes from the Desert Fathers, who are kind of the root of our Western tradition of the seven deadly sins. Mm. So in the West, we call it sloth. But in the East, they actually have eight evil thoughts. And one of those thoughts is the thought of acedia. And it's an attack on desire. It's an attack on desire, right? And so my pithy definition of it is the inability or the unwillingness to desire the good. Right? So it usually manifests itself in one or two ways. We're avoiding doing much of anything. We're just scrolling through our phone or Facebook for an hour and not doing anything and just trying to do something mindlessly. Or we busy ourselves so much with other things that we don't choose the essential things in life. And so acedia is trying to attack our central desires for the good, which is ultimately God. And then through God, and then if that's God is our ultimate choice, then all these little concrete choices in life are meant to be choices to help orient us towards God. So choosing prayer as a priority in our life should be one of those first things rather than something we tack on at the end of the day. Acedia says, you can pray later. And we all know what happens. Mm-hmm. We don't pray later, right?
Exactly.
And that's what acedia is like. You don't really desire this. You don't really want this. And so it creates listlessness. It does create sloth. It also creates a hyper busyness and activity, which I know is something that in a lot of people's lives where they're choosing all these things, but they're actually not choosing the essential things of life, which is the things that help us orient towards God, which is our life in liturgy and prayer, and and the things that help us grow and do our vocation well.
That's so interesting. I remember St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, used to talk about how like there's kind of a flip side of laziness. And he once was talking to a guy, and it was about an employee, and it was said to him, oh, how hard this guy works. And St. Jose Maria said, no, really what you should say is how much he rushes around. Like, he's just doing a whack of stuff, but he's not really doing anything in a certain sense because he's not focusing on the most important things. And I think acedia really speaks to that, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And so it's about choosing what is essential in life. And so that even means sometimes saying no to things, just even though it might be good. If we busy ourselves too much, we lose sight. Because I think part of the thing is acedia needs the quiet to listen to God and to do what is essential in life. Mm. So it's like, yeah, great. You have a family with five kids. Praying for 2 hours a day is probably not a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. Or working with the homeless for 12 hours a day and neglecting your family at home is probably not a good idea, even though it's a good work in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're moving away from your desire from the things God has given you to find him. Because God has always mediated through the concrete things of life. So Asita is really trying to draw us back, Asita is trying to draw us away from those concrete choices whereby we find God.
That is so fascinating, and it's so true. I mean, as Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added unto you. I mean, they'll kind of fall into place if we get the big stones in the jar, as, you know, Stephen Covey used to say in the Seven Habits, you know, get those things in first, and then, you know, try to bring some order into your life. And that's so hard for us to do. I mean, there's so many distractions. There's so much going on. We're so busy. Mm-hmm. And in these COVID times, you know, everyone's stuck at home. I don't think it's really lightened up for a lot of people. I think in some ways we're working more than ever before.
Yeah. I mean, I can just personally, I kind of miss the lockdown sometimes. Yeah. I know, as a priest, I don't have some of those economic struggles people have. So I recognize my privilege there, if you will. Right. But it's like, you know, like, there was something about the silence and the quiet and the slowness. And I heard that from a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't have to rush out every day anymore.
I felt that too, you know,
and that was such a relief for a lot of people. And I feel like I actually think God was trying to teach us a lesson through all this. And I worry we've perhaps forgotten this. And I'm hoping and praying that we might look back and see what God was trying to teach us.
Well, speaking of that, what God might be trying to teach us in the pandemic, and by the way, this wasn't intended as a segue, but it's going to work really well. you're working on a book right now about finding Christ in the pandemic, right?
Yeah, so it's called Finding Christ in the Crisis, What the Pandemic Can Teach Us. And this was written by my friend, Michael Heinlein, and myself. It's a little booklet, so you can actually, they just went up to the pre-orders are on our Sunday Visitor CatholicBookstore.com.
Okay.
And it'll be coming out on all your usual places. It'll be out on Kindle, too. Mm-hmm. It's $2. It's a little booklet with an attempt to help try and see, what is God actually trying to teach us? And what can we learn? How can we attune ourselves to actually listen to God? I think part of the problem was there was all sorts of reactions, and I kind of understand why they were happening, but we weren't listening. And I think we need to stop and listen. And so we wrote this little booklet as a little service to the church to try and help people listen to see what God was saying. Now, it's obviously our own private theological opinion. It's not church teaching, but we try to root ourselves in the teachings of the church around the Eucharist. Like, what is God saying when we are removed from the sacraments? And what is that trying to teach us about how we understand the sacraments? How can we understand what God's doing through us? And so we use the Old Testament and the Babylonian exile as a way to help interpret this time.
Wow.
And so this is, it's a short booklet. It's only about 16,000 words, and it's cheap, so that hopefully you'll order even a bunch so you can give them out to your friends or order them for your parish or something like that. We wanted to do this as a service so that people can, because I think that's perhaps one thing that's been lacking a little bit is a kind of pastoral, spiritual, theological response. And so we wanted to offer this to people.
I love that analogy of the Babylonian exile as sort of a template for what we're dealing with here. That is just brilliant. I love that. So, oh man, I want to read this. I got to get a copy of this. And it's only $2.
Yeah.
$2 Canadian. You know, it's
$2 American. That's $2 American.
Oh, man. Okay. I thought I was going to give people a deal there. But anyways.
Well, I think if you order in bulk, you can get a deal.
Okay. That's awesome. So oursundayvisitor.com. OSV.com.
OSVCatholicBookstore.com, it looks like.
OSVCatholicBookstore.com. That's where you want to go if you want to
pre-order
that book.
And I'm sure it'll
be
on Amazon and stuff, too.
Yeah, you should be able to hopefully pre-order that on Amazon as well. So it's Finding Christ in the Crisis.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's going to be really, really helpful for people, I think, a big, big service.
Absolutely.
And speaking of Canada and Canucks, like you and me, what about the Vancouver Canucks? Were you happy about their performance in the NHL bubble?
I was ecstatic. they played their hearts out. It was good hockey. Like, that was my worry. I was like, how is this going to be good hockey with no fans? They played their heart. Like, the NHL players in general played great hockey, and I was very impressed. And But I was not expecting my Canucks to do this well. Bo Horvat just kind of exploded with scoring. And we had Quinn Hughes was playing just amazingly. Our goaltending was the best in the playoffs, I think. I think our age and our energy levels, like, we're a younger team, and so they're still building endurance and how to play through those long, hard, grinding games. And we're a smaller team, so they learned some lessons through this. But I was it was a lot of fun to watch, and it was very exciting. And I definitely had hoarse voice a couple times when I was saying mass the next day from screaming at the TV too much.
Well, one of the people we'll have to have on the show in the future, of course, is Sister Helena Burns. Speaking of the Daughters of St. Paul, also another big hockey fan. I know she's a friend of yours, and you probably met her on social media too, right?
She was my first friend I actually really met on social media, because we were chirping at each other because she's a Blackhawks fan, who are the mortal enemies of the Canucks, and then her second team is the Boston Bruins, who are the other mortal enemies of the Vancouver Canucks. So
I know.
We chirp at each other about hockey, but we've become very good friends. But that was all because of Twitter. We chirped, and we had fun, and it was in charity and fun, and we've become good friends because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had on this show just a couple of weeks ago, John Scott, who, of course, was the MVP of the NHL All-Star Game in 2016.
So
very
awesome.
Unlikely MVP. Yeah, it was amazing. And he's become Catholic. And they're making a movie about his All-Star appearance and how
that's
that went.
So cool.
He was named the MVP, and that's being written by Mitch Albom. He was a great guest on the show, too. And he talked about being, you know, becoming Catholic, coming into the church. He's a dad of six girls. And he's got a couple of podcasts of his own, one of which is called Dropping the Gloves, which is really more of a hockey-centered podcast. But he also has another one called The Fight That Matters. And, of course, he was a fighter in the NHL. But the true battle that we have to face, especially as Catholic men, is to try to be conformed into the image of Christ. And how can we do that in a culture that is so inimical to what we're all about as Catholics?
I think the best way, it's something that John Paul II wrote in and Gaudium et Spes in Vatican II. It's what we call the law of the gift, right? Mm. Man, as in like humanity, cannot find itself except through a sincere gift of self. And so the best way we can do things is just to give ourselves away. And Jesus promises us that only when you give yourself your way, when you spend yourself, there you will not only find yourself, but you'll find him. I'll share a quick story with that just to help exemplify that.
Please do.
I was with the Missionaries of Charity, we had five guys die in 6 days at the hospice.
Oh,
and it was a very difficult week. It's tiring. You're just going nonstop. You're cleaning dead bodies. You're having prayer masses, burials, just everything, all the medical stuff. And then Saturday night comes. It's at the end of a very long, hard week. And I go to the chapel to go pray at adoration with the sisters, and I'm putting my alb on to serve at adoration. I put my head against the wall, and I say, Jesus, I have nothing left to give. Mm. And that was the best holy hour I had in my life.
Wow.
Because it was just one of the, I'm not perfect at giving myself away, but that was a week where I know I did. And there Jesus helped me see that in giving myself away, he will not only will he help me find myself, but he will supply me with his love. And help me to, and draw me closer and deeper into a relationship with him. And so give yourself away. Spend yourself.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of people needed to hear that, what you just said. And one of the things we were talking about, we just got a couple minutes here left on the show, but we talked about your time when we were chatting on the phone earlier prior to the show about your time with the Missionaries of Charity in San Francisco. And how, you know, really they don't worry about God's provision. Even, you know, social media wise, they don't get on social media and look for vocations. They just sort of trust God for that and for everything else. How can we adopt that attitude, which we need to do, all of us, no matter what our vocation is in life?
I think it just becomes, and it's hard because we're so inundated with produce things for yourself. But it's really like what they're living is the Marian heart of awaiting receptivity. And that's the heart of the church, which is the Christian heart. And so it means this learning to say, God, I'm going to trust you. Now, it doesn't mean we don't act, obviously, but it's not a quietism.
Yeah.
But it's a loving trust that says, you know what, God, if you really want this, and this is a desire you've put in my heart, you're going to provide for this. And he often does. And it might not be according to the ways we think it is. He might not provide something because he doesn't actually want us to have it. But just to say, God, you're going to give me what I really and truly need. And there's a real trusting there that Mary had, that the MCs have, because that's really the Christian life. Mary had nothing, and she's taking on this mission without knowing any of its implications. Think of all the emotions one would go through in that moment at the Annunciation. And yet,
there's so much there.
She says yes.
She says yes. And Father, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I can't believe how fast this hour is going. I'm glad that you said yes to coming on this program. We'll have you back. Father Harrison Ayer has been my guest on the Cale Clark Show. Really want to thank you all for listening. Go check out his podcast, Clerically Speaking, and follow him on Twitter. We'll be back tomorrow for a great show about St. John Henry Newman. See you then. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.
Day 31, Tower of David, pray for us. The Tower of David in Old Jerusalem was a mighty tower that defended the city. Tender devotion to Mary, the Mother of God, is the tower that defends our faith. In the foothills, the Pyrenees Mountains, separating France from Spain, you'll still find the remains of ancient stone watchtowers, which served as sentinels to warn and protect the Christians from advancing Moorish armies. Charlemagne, Roland, Roncesvalles, Covadonga, El Cid are epic names of persons and places caught up in that struggle, the longest war in the history of the world. The Blessed Mother of the House of David is like a strong tower who wards off the attacks of the enemy. Stay close to her by daily devotions, the rosary, the angelus, the scapular, and you will keep the enemy at bay, and you will stay strong in the Catholic and Christian faith. Tower of David, pray for the church and the nation.